everyone. This is Chelsea, and I am about to air a controversial interview. So I want to address that right off the bat. I have a love-hate relationship with controversy. On the one hand, I think it's necessary to encourage important conversations and reach higher understanding. But on the other hand, it sucks, and it's hard and emotional. And after my season 2 about sexual assault and all of the resulting pain amongst listeners, I became scared to approach anything controversial again. And I recognize that ultimately doesn't do us any favors. So I'm airing this interview with the understanding that Audio Boom doesn't agree or disagree with anything expressed today. They haven't even heard it. The controversy I'm talking about pertains to religions versus cults, and specifically to two groups mentioned today, the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons. I have a tremendous amount of respect for logical, thoughtful, and kind-hearted people. No matter what group organization they're in, no matter if they are religious or not. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for my guest, who is exceptionally informed on these subjects. And I will say that outside our official interview, he mentioned he didn't want to come at progressive or moderate people, including those within the Mormon faith. His aim is to address extremists. And he knows and has spoken with Mormon allies who can recognize extremists within their group. So it's not about religion. We try to make that clear. It's about extremism. And there are some religions that extremism happens within. So please don't get upset, please. And if you are, I am really sorry, genuinely, because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings or offend anybody. I just want to have the, as Jessa has called them, and which I love, uncomfortable conversations, because they're necessary. And if you disagree with something expressed here, please tell me, because I am not afraid to be educated, and I always want to be a better informed person. So that said, today's interview is fantastic. It's with the incredible Telltale Atheist, but I'll let my Skype self lead that part off. Today, we are speaking with the YouTuber and public educator, Telltale Atheist, Telltale for short. He operates a channel that explores the shadowy and often uncomfortable subjects pertaining to cultic makeup and oppressive religions. Hi, Telltale.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so happy that you made the time to talk to me today. So you and I are actually united in our admiration for someone who's been on my mind every single day over the last 6 months. He's a leading cult expert, and his name is Stephen Hassan. My season is predominantly based on his book, Combating Cult Mind Control. And some people listening may have seen him on Leah Remini's Scientology in the Aftermath or checked out his website, freedomofmind.com. And Telltale, you examined groups primarily by using Stephen Hassan's models and methods, I noticed, which is what intrigued me initially about your videos and why I found them so compelling. And you've had a profound impact on generating discussions and informing current and previous group members about the organizations they're in. So I'm really curious to know what inspired you to begin this work.
Well, I started out with YouTube not really having any kind of specific goals or anything like that, but I felt like there was a little bit of a vacuum in the atheist community, because they had all kind of gone off to talk about politics and other things. So what I ended up doing was I felt like I wanted to fill that vacuum. So I started the YouTube channel of my own. I started out talking about atheism and things like that, talking about Kent Hovind and Ken Ham. And as time went on, I started to try to drift more in a direction that made me happy the most, which meant that I put out a YouTube video about Jehovah's Witnesses, since that was my background. Didn't think anybody was going to be super interested in it, but it exploded. It was one of my most popular videos at the time. So I was lucky enough that YouTube allowed me, or the algorithm and the interest in the audience allowed me to talk about what I really wanted to talk about and still gain attention and still bring in eyes and things like that. So that is ultimately what kind of inspired me to start going in this direction. Eventually, I started reading more of Stephen Hassan's books and looking at his models and studying them and thinking about them, and decided it was time for me to try to communicate them to a broader audience. So that's really what moved me in that direction.
Amazing. Well, personally, I'd like to thank you for what you're doing, because I think it's really important work. And I'm curious as to how Stephen Hassan's work informs you and your understanding of your previous group, the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right. So I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into what I read the first time I read Combating Cult Mind Control. I mean, of course, I read it and I thought about everything, but I feel like the second and the third time I read through it, I continued to pick up more and learn more about what he was getting at. And he actually talks about this in the book. He says you should probably go through it multiple times, once just to get a feel for what it says, and then the second time try going through it with a highlighter and picking out specific things that maybe apply to your group and things like that. So that's what I ended up doing. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear my cat, but he's meowing now. Get, shoo, go.
That's okay.
So that's what I started doing. That is what I ended up doing, was going through it with a highlighter, taking a look at it. And I started to find a lot more information than I had previously realized was there. I mean, I broke down the BITE model. I found information on how to talk to cult recruiters, questions to ask, things like that. And I found some things about the nature of influence, what is healthy influence and what is unhealthy influence and things like that. Things that certainly I didn't notice my first time through. So I figured I would try to communicate that as clearly as I could.
That's great. And when you initially read it, or when you were rereading it, because I know in his updated version, he addresses the group of the Jehovah's Witnesses specifically, but were they addressed when you were reading through the book?
Originally, I actually got the book in audio format, and it was the original, like, 1989 version or whatever it was. So no, they did not talk about Jehovah's Witnesses the first time I went through it. Then I ended up getting a copy of the 2018 version. And at this point, I've probably read through it, or what, maybe it was a 2016 version. Well, anyway, I've probably read through it three or four different times, the newest copy. So it's definitely worth it to get the newer copy. It's got so much more new information.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, just a quick background, because in our season so far, we haven't addressed the BITE model, and that's something that you just referenced. So can you break that down very quickly for us?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. So the BITE model, it was made by Stephen Hassan, and it's an acronym. It stands for Behavior, Information, Thought, and Emotion Control, BITE. And it's basically the model that we use to determine if something is using cult-like tactics on people, determine if this group is trying to control people. So it's a little bit more complicated than that. This is another thing that I kind of picked up on as time went on and I read more about it. But the end goal of the tactics in the BITE model are to try to replace somebody's authentic personality with the personality that the cult wants them to have. So, for example, you'll find different groups out there that are setting up hierarchies of leadership. They're setting up rewards and punishments and rules and things like that. So with Jehovah's Witnesses, you'll have them telling people you can't talk to ex-members. So that's the hierarchy telling what the rules are. And then you have the hierarchy enforcing those rules by disfellowshipping you, by shunning you if you talk to somebody that's on the outside. So they'll set up the system of rewards and punishments, and they enforce those rules, which leads to people kind of slowly getting their personalities replaced or overwritten, if you will, with what the cult wants it to be. I don't know if you guys have ever spoken with a cult member, but if you'll think about it real hard and notice and watch what they do, they smile a lot. It's almost like it's really hard to describe sometimes. And of course, I did this too. But if you look in their eyes, it's like they're almost glassy. It's like they're glazed over sometimes. Like if a Jehovah's Witness knocks on your door and they're trying to give you their presentation, just pay attention to it and think about it and think to yourself, was this person always like this? Were they born with this kind of glassy expression? Were they, you know, is this really who they are? Is this their authentic personality? Or is the goal of this cult to replace their personalities with the one they want them to have?
Right. That speaks a lot to what Stephen Hassan addresses in his book, where he, you know, the cult identity versus the authentic identity. And he seems to be well-trained in witnessing the difference between them. And it sounds like you have personal experience also witnessing that. And to your point, I don't know if you've ever spoken to someone in a cult. That made me think very quickly, like shuffle through my mind. And I bet without knowing it, all of us have. You know?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, we definitely have. And you're right. Stephen Hassan talks about this a lot in his books. I think he's written 3 books. He has a 4th on the way. Subtle plug for Stephen Hassan. Dude's just awesome. I love the guy. But anyway.
I completely agree.
Yeah. So he talks a lot about the nature of influence and things like that. And the bite model and the nature of influence kind of go hand in hand with each other. And yeah, you're right. I mean, we all have pretty much talked to cult members. I remember I worked with a Mormon woman, super nice lady, just the nicest lady ever. She'd do anything for you. But talking to her was fake. It was plastic. You know, it's almost hard to describe. But I'm sure a lot of people out there probably know exactly what I'm talking about. That's the authentic self being replaced with the cult identity.
Right. So this really leads me into my next question, because so far we have named 2 groups, the Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. And those are, I would say, largely understood to be legitimate and uncontroversial religions. And you, like in your work, you really attempt to answer the very, very controversial, and by the way, I think that just this conversation is going to offend some people, the fact that they're even being mentioned in the context of cults. But something that you really strive to do is answering the dicey question of where is that line drawn between religion and cult? Because, like, is it a fine line? And what are the parameters that we should be examining? And it gets very, very uncomfortable to talk about. And something I like to do on my show / hate to do on my show is have that uncomfortable conversation. So when it comes to addressing the question, where is the line drawn, religion versus cult? I'm wondering, how do you approach this subject?
Yeah, interesting question. So as I mentioned, there is the bite model. When I was Jehovah's Witness, when I was growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, they were trying to get me baptized, or I was trying to get baptized. I think I was probably 13 years old or something, which, by the way, is entirely too young. If you can't get married at 13, which is a decision that'll affect your life forever, you shouldn't be able to sign your life away to an organization at 13 either. Anyway, don't even get me started on that. So we were studying the Jehovah's Witness literature in an effort to get me baptized. And they read to me the definition of cult, which at the time was a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister, and a system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. And they said, well, look here, we don't have any kind of special veneration or devotion toward any figure or object. We worship God, you know, so that means that we're not a cult. And it was just that simple to them. Well, I got to thinking about it, and it's just not that simple when it comes down to it. The bottom line is that we have to break things down. It's like the addiction model of disease. You can't define the word addiction and just put everybody who fits it into this category. We have a model. We have steps and descriptions of those steps and everything else. It's complicated. It's not that simple. So we have the we have the BITE model, which is the model that we use to determine if something is a cult or not. It's really used to determine if this group is replacing somebody's authentic self with the cult identity. So we have things like, under behavior control, we have, do they restrict or control sexuality? Do they control clothing or hairstyle? Do they exploit you financially? Do they restrict leisure time and activities? Do they require you to seek permission for major decisions? Things like that. And under information control, we have, do they discourage access to non-cult sources of information? Do they generate and use propaganda extensively, which you see a lot in Mormonism and in Jehovah's Witnesses heavily? The Watchtower Society, the company that owns Jehovah's Witnesses as the religion, it's a printing company. They print insane amounts of propaganda for them. They have, do they gaslight to make you doubt your own memory? Do they require you to report thoughts and feelings and activities to superiors? Then under thought control, we have, do they instill black and white, us versus them, good versus evil thinking? Do they use loaded language and cliches to stop complex thought? Do they teach thought-stopping techniques to prevent critical thoughts, which with the Mormon church, we find that an awful lot, teaching thought-stopping techniques to prevent critical thoughts.
Really?
And actually, and here's an example of how Jehovah's Witnesses do it. They put out some videos a couple of years ago, I think 2016. They were fondly known as the bunker videos by apostates like myself. And they were basically a depiction of Jehovah's Witnesses during the Great Tribulation / Armageddon, when they believe all the world governments are going to turn against them and attack them and jail them and all this other stuff. So they're being depicted as hiding underground in this bunker from the police or the military or whoever else. And they go through in this video, each person, each actor, kind of goes through a personal experience about how they stayed loyal to Jehovah in the face of adversity. And it's just one after another, thought-stopping techniques, teaching them how to shut down negative thinking, quote-unquote. I mean, those are the words that they use. They are teaching them to stop negative thinking and stay loyal to Jehovah. It gets really extreme sometimes. So that's one of the things under thought control. Yeah, it gets really serious. So then we've got use excessive meditation, singing and prayer and chanting to block thoughts, reject rational analysis, critical thinking and doubt. And then finally, under emotion control, we've got things like promote feelings of guilt, shame and unworthiness, shower you with praise and attention, aka love bombing. Label some emotions as evil, worldly, sinful, or wrong. I mean, a lot of these groups, Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons specifically, hit every single one of these items on the BITE model. It's scary. And when you just take a step back and look at it objectively and stop trying to look at it through this biased lens of, you know, I was an ex-Mormon, or I am an ex-Mormon, and they're not so bad, and things like that. When you try to step back and look at it as objectively as you can and compare it to other groups, you can see that it's harmful. The goal is to shape your personality into something that's more malleable and useful to the Mormon church, to the Jehovah's Witness church.
Right. That's such a good amount of information, and I really appreciate the examples that you gave. I couldn't help but think back to a time in high school when my girlfriend showed me this video called "The Commies Are Coming," and it was a real video from 1950. It was called "The Commies Are Coming," and it was this propaganda film released in the U.S. And this man came home, and his family had just turned were immediately communist, and they all acted like zombies. And it sounds, yep. it sounds absurd, but when you were describing that video, that in a much more subtle, and I'm sure mature way explains thought stopping techniques. It's so harmful, but it's so prevalent. And
yeah, I agree with you. I was going to say what you're talking about there is probably linked to the Red Scare, famously in the U.S., the U.S. was like freaking out and trying to scare people into hating communism and atheism and everything else because, Russia and China and other countries like that were our enemies. It was really prevalent. I mean, that's what people think when they hear the word propaganda. And
without understanding what those are, just teaching them that they're wrong and in some way scary and encouraging ignorance.
Yeah, that's right. And it is propaganda. That's very true. But Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and other groups like that, they also put out some really serious propaganda. It's as sad as it is. It's very fascinating to see how they operate. And it makes you wonder, are they doing it knowingly? Do they know what they're doing? And honestly, I don't think they know what they're doing. I think I don't think they're actively setting out to replace people's identities and take advantage of people. I think that they, by and large, I'm sure there are people in the leadership of, say, Mormonism who know what they're doing and are out to control people intentionally. But I think specifically with Jehovah's Witnesses, I think the leadership probably buys their own propaganda.
Yeah, they're all believers.
Yeah. Which is even more fascinating because it's like they're self-indoctrinating. They're the ones making the propaganda and they're believing it. I mean, they believe themselves to be these special leaders on Earth. It's just really fascinating, really sad at the same time, you know?
Well, I'm going to throw a really hard question at you and you can shut it down if you want.
Sure. But
as you're talking, and I can see how these groups might fall into the definition that we're talking about because they fit the BITE model. But you said something which is, and that's destructive. These groups are destructive or harmful. And just the devil's advocate in me flashed into the thought of every practicing Mormon I've ever met has seemed so happy. Like I actually made the comment before to people I know that the happiest people I've ever met were Mormon. They just seemed very, very, very happy in their lifestyles. And so how do you marry those two observations?
Right. Something you'll notice about Jehovah's Witnesses is they're very happy people at its face also. It's part of this mask that they have to wear. It's part of this identity that they have to put on. For example, Jehovah's Witnesses will – I keep talking about them, but that's because I know them the best,
of
obviously.
Of course, yes, please.
But this applies to Mormonism too. So it's not just Jehovah's Witnesses. But Jehovah's Witnesses will – the leadership will say you should put on this face, this happiness. You should be glad to serve Jehovah in any way you can. I think they put out this piece of propaganda. I think it was on JW Broadcasting their TV network or whatever. So they put out this video where the governing body members were saying, if you have to repaint a kingdom hall and the elders give you 2-inch brushes instead of say 10-inch brushes or rollers or something, you should just do it and you should do it with a smile on your face. Now, they weren't that blunt, but that was the bottom line. They said, if people start lobbying for rollers or trying to unionize or something and get this changed or protesting, there's going to cause division in the congregation. We just need to follow Jehovah's direction, which is passed down to the governing body, which is passed down through the elders. So they encourage stopping your critical thinking, just going with what they want you to do and smiling. It's constantly about being happy, showing that you're happy. And a lot of the time, from my understanding, that there isn't much data to back this up, but I've come to understand that Jehovah's Witnesses, there's a big problem with anxiety medication. it's kind of part of the culture. They take a lot of anxiety medication because they're beaten down and stressed and worried and just working themselves into the ground constantly for this group. But they have to keep a smile on their face the entire time. It's just like the coworker I was talking about has this smile 24/7, and her eyes were glassy almost all the time. It seems like they're the happiest people. But when they come out of that religion, they feel violated. They feel like they were taken advantage of. I know this because that's how I felt, and I was angry. And you can see that reflected in a lot of the people who have kind of exited these oppressive, extreme religions. They feel, you know, I never celebrated a birthday my entire life. I never had a birthday cake until like last year or something. Some coworkers got one for me. And I was upset over that. I lost so much time to this religion. People get really upset over it, and you can hear it in their voices. So you can see mm-hmm. this happiness from people, but it's fake and plastic at its core.
And that emotional projection or emotionality or whatever you want to call it, I bet that actually reinforces the believer's ideas, because they see people in the group being happy, and then once someone leaves the group, they see them being unhappy. And just that very shallow observation might inform the way that, you know, their inclination to remain in the group.
Yeah, definitely. Now I'm going to get ready for me to say something a little bit controversial in the ex-Jehovah's Witness community, but there's something called Kingdom Hall crashing. And it's basically, I don't know if you've heard of this or the audience has heard of it, but it's where ex-Jehovah's Witnesses will go into a Kingdom Hall dressed like regular Jehovah's Witnesses. They'll sit down. They will raise their hands to comment because they have a question and answer section in many meetings. And they'll start saying things that are they're saying apostate things, basically. They're saying there's a problem with child sex abuse and there's a problem with this and that thing. Then they'll stand up and make a big deal and start yelling out, you know, you guys need to look this up, go to this website and read about the lawsuits Jehovah's Witnesses have been faced with. And at its face, that may seem like you're getting information into this almost compound where people would never have access to that information otherwise. But I understand that feels good. I can understand why it would feel good to do something like that, to almost strike back at this organization that really damaged you in many ways. But it's not helping the stigma that the Watchtower Society or the Jehovah's Witnesses are putting out about apostates being mentally diseased. This is why people think that apostates are mentally diseased, because of these types of events. And you can get on YouTube and you can look at cases of this Kingdom Hall crashing and watch how Jehovah's Witnesses react. Most of the time, what'll happen is the audience members will physically cover their ears so that they don't hear what the apostate is saying, because they believe it's lies coming straight from Satan. And the elders will try to escort the people out. If they won't go, then they will either surround them in a circle and lock arms and walk them out, or they'll just call the police and the police will show up and take them out. It's really fascinating to watch how they react, but it's so heartbreaking at the same time. I don't endorse Kingdom Hall crashing. I think that's reinforcing that bad stigma.
That makes sense. During this interview, but certainly like in your work on your channel, you broach a lot of controversial subjects. Like you just said that, addressing Kingdom Hall crashing alone is going to be a controversial thing to do. And certainly examining these groups through the lens of religion versus cult that alone is controversial. And I'm not sure really what to expect personally, after airing this interview. So I'm curious that as someone who does this regularly, have you faced public backlash about any of the videos you've aired? And if so, what shape has that taken? What has that been like for you?
Well, I was I was kind of afraid to address some of these groups. For example, Scientology, I know that they get really aggressive
yes.
with people who talk badly about them. I mean, there are websites out there about the enemies of Scientology. I think Leah Remini has one. I think Chris Shelton has one. I mean, every ex-Scientologist who's vocal about it has a website about how evil they are. So I was
sometimes myself, many, many websites. And they're very litigious as well.
They are. It includes information that is largely not true, but they find a grain of truth in something and they run with it and just make it up. And it's scary almost. It's really scary. They're trying to destroy these people is what they're doing. And I was thinking to myself, do I want to address Scientology? Do I want to go down this road? And the answer I found in myself is yes. I would be so honored if they created a website about me. I don't even care what they put on it. They could put anything. But it means that I'm scaring them by the things that I'm saying. The groups and the subjects that I'm not supposed to address are the things that I want to address the most at this point. But recently, Jehovah's Witnesses have had a history of kind of being pacifists generally. And Scientology has had a history of being really aggressive toward their enemies. And I found out recently, actually, that Jehovah's Witnesses are kind of taking a step toward the Scientology approach. Apparently, they've got some people from their compound, Bethel, doing oppositional research on apostates like myself and like Lloyd Evans from the John Cedars YouTube channel. And they're trying to find any chance they can to subpoena us to get our real names. That's scary. That's extremely scary. But, you know, like I said about Scientology, I've taken on bigger. Bring it on. I'm not afraid of anything. And as far as the controversy with Kingdom Hall crashing, it is kind of a controversial subject, but I wouldn't worry too much. It's more just controversial in a really tiny niche, like a really small group of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses will probably be unhappy with what I said. They'll be okay, though.
Right, but you seem to be speaking to offending the organizations themselves or the admins or leaders within the organization. But, like, what about just practitioners? Have you received a lot of backlash from people who are just believers of you know, whatever group it is you're discussing, and they find what you say offensive or tell you they, you know, you hurt their feelings or that you're, I don't know, like, have there been a lot of personal responses?
Attacks or?
Yeah.
Yeah, there have. There have been some personal responses, mainly in the comment section of my YouTube channel. But here's something that I tried to do. I started out as Telltale Atheist. I moved to Telltale because I feel like I think 73% of the country is religious, and 27% or somewhere in there is considered none, no category at all, not atheist, not religious, not anything. And I feel like limiting myself to that 27% of people isn't really what I need to do. I've felt like 43% of the country believes that Noah's Ark is a real, true, literal story. Somewhere in there. Don't quote me on these statistics, but it's in that vicinity. Mm-hmm. I feel like I want to get at that 43% of people. And I'm not trying to attack the people. I'm trying to point out to these people that their beliefs are illogical. So if I can get the other, 50... I'm sorry, I can't math right now. Yeah, 57%. If I can get the other 57% of the country who doesn't believe that Noah's Ark is a real literal story on my side to work with me against extremism, that would be the ideal situation for me. I'd like to bring these people in, work with them, and maybe when they start working with me against extremism, they'll start to look at their own ideas and beliefs and turn that critical eye inward.
Right. The mention of extremism, I think, is important because something I learned from Stephen Hassan's book is that cults are not limited to just religion. There are also commercial cults and there are political cults. And certainly, you know, like ISIS that's an example of a cult. I mean, that blends, you know, that's religion and politics. But yeah, it's a very sticky web of definition, and extremism certainly, I think, is a universal factor amongst any of these groups that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
definitely. Especially with ISIS, it's a really fascinating dynamic that you see where politics and religion kind of meet like that. And something else I didn't realize before, or something I didn't think about, is how, for example, MLMs, like multi-level marketing schemes, can be cults, like Young Living, for example. Stephen Hassan actually calls out MLMs in his book as cults in many cases. But another thing we have to be careful about is we have to make sure that we draw a distinction between categories and groups. So, for example, Islam is not a cult, but ISIS is a cult. Christianity is not a cult, but Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormonism, Heaven's Gate, those were cults that kind of fall under the category of Christianity. Young Living is a cult, but MLMs generally are not cults, that kind of thing. So it's something to think about.
It is. It's a really interesting topic to just dive into. I mean, you can spend months reading literature on this subject and still need more in order to you know, yeah, navigate the world effectively. So what is it? I mean, I think that you've already addressed this, like what you're hoping to achieve through your channel, through your videos, and most importantly, through the discussions that those are inciting.
Right. So my main goal with everything is to bring in as many allies as possible, religious or not, and see if we can address these issues. Because there are plenty of moderate, relaxed, chill Lutherans or Methodists or Jewish people out there who see things for what they are, have their authentic identities intact, and want to help in this fight against extremism. So I think my main goal for my channel, for my life, is to try to bring attention, bring awareness to the fact that these extreme groups are trying to modify people's personalities in a way that will make them more manipulatable by those groups. And maybe bring in as many allies as I can in that fight. Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned that. It's, you know, it certainly sounds like possibly people might after like just a cursory glance at your work, or just like hearing a minute of this interview without listening to the entire thing, might think that you are someone who is anti-religion, but you just explained you're not anti-religion, you're anti-extremism.
Yeah, definitely. That is a really important distinction to me. In fact, I think I just talked about it. It's been maybe in the past couple of months, I gave a big, long explanation of my position on this in one of my videos. I should probably pull that out and isolate that part, because it was just one part in a video. But yeah, that is extremely important to me, making sure that religious people know that I am on their side with things. They can be on my side, too, against extremism. We'll work it out together.
Oh, that's a beautiful sentiment, and I really like the way you worded that. So I imagine that people listening are going to want to learn more about you. They're going to want to check out your videos, and they're going to get more. So how can they do that?
Yeah, I actually have my main YouTube channel, Telltale. I talk about this kind of thing all the time, you know, the authentic identities and the bite model, and I also address different types of cults over time. So I debunk cult propaganda, and I talk about new cults every so often. I talked about Black Israelites and the Branch Davidians and just a whole bunch. So you can check me out on that. Also, I have a podcast where I talk about I just kind of talk about my thoughts on things. I talk about politics and games and just whatever. I'm also reading extremist literature right now, reading through Jehovah's Witnesses' new book, Pure Worship of Jehovah, at this immediate moment. I may actually move on to ISIS propaganda sometime soon. That may be next. We will see. But yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to.
Wow. Are you actively like discussing what you're reading on your podcast?
Yeah. So I will basically read through, say, a single paragraph and then pause, talk about what I pulled from that paragraph and what I think about it, and then move on to the next one. Usually get through one chapter every 2 weeks is about the rate I've been doing it.
That sounds amazing. Is the name of your podcast also Telltale?
It's Telltale Podcast, yeah.
Telltale Podcast. All right, perfect. Well, I'm definitely going to be listening. And thank you again so much for having this illuminating conversation with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Anytime. I'm so glad to be here.
Stay tuned for next week's episode, in which Lola continues to chronicle her descent into indoctrination within TCS. See you soon.